Assalamu alaikum, dear viewers. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spotlight Middle East. I am Rahshan Saglam and I will be your host today. The year 2013 was full of political changes in the Middle East and North Africa. The countries who have been witnessing uprisings witnessed violence and a state of security chaos. The elected president of Egypt was ousted by the Egyptian army. Two prominent leaders in Tunisia were assassinated. The Syrian government delivered its chemical weapons, and we've witnessed the rise of the ISIS. Clashes in northern Lebanon with supporters and opponents of the Syrian regime, and several bomb attacks targeting Hezbollah stronghold, the Iranian embassy, and the northern city of Tripoli. Obama paid a visit to the region, and the negotiations between the Palestinians and Israel were back to the table. The number of terrorist attacks targeting Iraq rised. Add to that the young calm situation in Yemen with the whole seventh war in Sada'a and the clashes in the South Yemen. This and a lot more will be discussed in today's episode with our political analyst and a journalist, Kifar Kalmasyan. Hello and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
A lot of actions, a lot of changes in the Middle East and North Africa, and a lot of chaos, of course, in the region. We are going to start from where we are in Lebanon. And of course, we've witnessed a bomb attack last week that hit the Lebanese capital, Beirut, and assassinated or led to the assassination of a former minister in the Lebanese government, Mohammed Shattah. How do you assess the assassination?
Unfortunately, the assassination came in a very critical time for Lebanon. We are witnessing several bombings in southern suburbs of Lebanon, mm-hmm. and also clashes in the northern part. Mm-hmm. And we are also coming for the elections mm-hmm. In Lebanon. And what's the future of Lebanon? Is there going to be presidential elections? What is the outcome of the parliamentary elections? Yes, mm-hmm. there might be a vacuum in Lebanon. The assassination came. I'm wondering why they assassinated Mohammed Shattah, because he was out of the spotlight mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. the recent years, and he was considered one of the moderates inside the 14 March coalition. Mm-hmm. He didn't have an anti-Hezbollah rhetoric mm-hmm. since long time ago, mm-hmm. and he was trying to find some kind of reconciliation between mm-hmm. several parties in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And if we follow up the reactions on the assassination, we will see that
Hezbollah condemned the assassination, the Iranian foreign minister
yes.
did, a lot of March 8 alliance did condemn the assassination.
The danger is from the 14 March coalition, where the mm-hmm. American and British ambassadors, they attended the meeting mm-hmm. in Beit al-Wasat, mm-hmm. and the statements which came from this meeting by Mr. Senyora and others mm-hmm. who pointed their finger towards Hezbollah mm-hmm. and Syria. Mm-hmm. Now we will see.
And of course, Saad Hariri, the former prime minister, said that those who assassinated Rafiq Hariri, his father, assassinated
We
Mohammed
didn't
Shattah.
Find out who assassinated Rafiq Hariri mm-hmm. yet to accuse mm-hmm. the same party. Rafiq Saad Hariri himself, he confessed in one of his interviews that mm-hmm. his accusations towards Hezbollah and Syria was politicized, mm-hmm. was political mm-hmm. accusations, mm-hmm. and he was regretted
not
about
real
it.
Evidence. We
yes.
don't have real evidence.
And
yet.
We have to see now the exploitation of this assassination mm-hmm. by the 14 March coalition in order to reach power mm-hmm. again. We have to see the history quite carefully. In 2004 and 2005, when the assassination of Rafiq Hariri came, 14 March coalition led mm-hmm. a transitional government and they came into power. Mm-hmm. And now they need another trigger
to come into power again.
Do you think
that we're going to witness another March 14 rallies in Beirut, or do you think that March 14 are going to be gathered once again?
I'm afraid so, because the way the 14 March is dealing now with the assassination is very dangerous. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid that they might target Shia areas by saying that the Shias are assassinating mm-hmm. Sunni people from the 14 March coalition. Mm-hmm. This is a very dirty game. Has been done several times before during the civil war, and now in 2005, and now again in 2013 or 2014. Mm-hmm. So the outcome of the assassination might shape the outcome of the elections in Lebanon and the atmosphere and the atmosphere in Lebanon might lead to that the people might support the 14 March coalition by accusing Hezbollah.
The bomb attacks that we've been witnessing lately in Lebanon were not assassinating or were not an assassination attempt to any leader. Like we've witnessed in a stronghold of Hezbollah in Dahiyeh area two bomb attacks that targeted civilians only, and also the ones in Tripoli were targeting civilians, and the one in the Iranian embassy was not targeting the Iranian ambassador or someone particular. They were just bomb attacks to send messages. Why now assassinating a former minister? Do you think that it was aiming at assassinating the minister, or it was just a coincidence?
I believe that assassinating Mohammed Shattah is an attempt to exclude anyone or to eliminate any moderate figures from the 14 March coalition. I believe that those who are behind the assassination want to radicalize the 14 March movement and to make them clash against Hezbollah and 8 March.
So it's all to create sedition in the country.
Yes, yeah, sure. It's a sedition. We have to remember also, you already said the bombings in the southern suburb of Lebanon. It's a very typical way of Bandar Bush operations, Bandar Bin Sultan. And they were targeting the public of the Hezbollah. They were not targeting any figures. They wanted to target the public because he already said in one of his statements that if Hezbollah didn't withdraw its troops from Syria, we will punish them and we will target their interests in the Middle East.
And they will be paying the price for interfering in Syria. Kivork, the 2013 was a bad year in Lebanon. How do you assess Lebanese government actions towards what's happening in Lebanon? Don't you think that it is about time that the Lebanese president and government take responsibility towards the bomb attacks and the clashes in Tripoli?
It's very difficult for them to take any action, especially the president, the prime minister, the any official in Lebanon. We have to see that it's a leader of the political party that he or she belongs. This is the first thing. And the political parties in Lebanon are based on sectarian parties. This is the second. And the third is the regional dimension. Almost all political parties are linked with regional powers. So each political figure or politician here in Lebanon are serving basically the interests of the regional states.
In a foreign country.
And when problems happens in northern side of Lebanon or in Tripoli, it needs a political decision. And when the politicians themselves, they don't want any kind of solution for Tripoli because the first thing, they want to keep the fire of this sectarian war away from Beirut. This is the first thing. And then they want the continuation of this conflict because it's a business. War is business, and all the political parties are having gains
involved in.
The second thing is the army, the Lebanese army. The Minister of Defense and the head of the military, they are not able to take decision without a political cover by 14 March and 8 March. And when, for example, when the incidents of Saida happened, when the army targeted Al-Asir and his militias, the 14 March accused
were against
the army. They were against the army basically. Although the jihadi takfirism, if it is spread in Lebanon, it will target the 14 March before the 8 March. So they are working against their interest. I don't know what kind of interpretation or vision they have in politics, but basically, if they are against these jihadi elements, then they will be targeted by them again. So maybe this.
Don't you think it's March 14 we're trying to protect Al-Asir, because those who are financing March 14 are the same who are financing Al-Asir.
Who were financing Al-Asir was Qatar, basically. It wasn't Saudi Arabia, and Qatar.
Is allied with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Qatar does whatever Saudi Arabia asks.
Yeah, they
to do.
Had several political. They already pay a lot of money for many political parties, and especially the president of Lebanon, and that's why they were hesitant against how to deal with this issue. And if we follow up the news and the coverage of Al-Asir, the operations against Al-Asir, we will see that, for example, MTV and Future, they were accusing Hezbollah
for interfering
with
the army.
And this is the same logic that they accuse Hezbollah for the involvement in Syria. We don't understand how it is an act of terrorism by Hezbollah when it is fighting terrorists in Syria. The same countries in the West, in EU and in the States, they labeled ISIS and al-Nusra as a terrorist organization. And when Hezbollah fights them in Syria, they consider Hezbollah a terrorist organization. This is a very double standard, and it's not even coherent policy.
But for them, it is someone who is from outside Syria fighting in Syria. This is, I'm trying just to be objective. For them, Hezbollah has nothing to do with the Syrian crisis, and it is fighting alongside the government because of political issues between Hezbollah.
We have to understand the background of the Syrian crisis quite well, that many, it is already proxy war since long time ago, and many political parties are involved, already involved, the intelligence
of
Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, and everybody is involved there. There are thousands of multinational jihadists
there. But
when
Hezbollah gets involved,
and
this is
people,
wrong.
And these people are very clear. They are saying, after the Syrian regime, we are coming to Lebanon. We are coming to Hezbollah. It is a preemptive war by Hezbollah to protect itself and to protect Lebanon from this takfirism that will...
And this is what the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Nasrullah, have said several times in his speeches, that we are trying to protect Lebanon. We went to the war so that we prevent war in Lebanon.
Yes, this is exactly what's happening, because the Wahhabism and the takfiri trend, if it comes to Lebanon, Lebanon is consists of 18 sects and religions. It's the same like Syria. And
so
the repercussions
it's killing
of this.
A lot of minorities. We have a lot of minorities here in Lebanon. The ISIS is assassinating the minorities now in Syria, and the turn is going to be on Lebanon.
Yes, they are even forcing people to convert in Syria. The Druze. There are 12 Druze villages in Syria. They declared that they are with ISIS, and they are with the Wahhabi version of Islam.
Just to protect themselves.
Just to protect themselves. As, if they didn't declare that, they might be beheaded or burned, or I don't know what happens for for them. This is very, very, it's happening many times in Syria, in a lot of places. The last thing happened in Adra. They burn people in the ovens in the and
yes, they're doing the worst than the Germans did to the Jews,
yes,
or Hitler did to the Jews.
Exactly.
Do you think that we are going to witness in Lebanon more bomb attacks after this assassination last week?
If the 14th March didn't succeed to mobilize the people, if they didn't succeed to shape the public opinion of the Lebanese, and if they didn't succeed to sell their story into the Lebanese, there will be other bombings in Lebanon, because the Saudis are very determined to win the cabinet and the elections in Lebanon, because they are losing in Syria, and they have to win in Lebanon. Otherwise, the balance of power in the Sham area, in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, it will be in the interest of Hezbollah, Syria, and the excess of the resistance in the Middle East. So I'm afraid of further bombings, especially in the areas of 14 March coalition.
If you want to accuse someone of this attack, who can we accuse?
There might be foreign intelligence agencies, like regional agencies, like Saudi Arabia. It can be in Americans, even the British. How can we explain the presence of the American and British ambassadors in Beit al-Wasat last week? Are they able, I mean, why do they have to involve in this kind of internal issues in Lebanon, and what kind of influence do they have on the 14 March coalition? Any decision that will come from 14 March coalition now, I believe it will be influenced by the Americans and the British.
Okay, Kivork Al-Masyan, we will continue this discussion, but before we have to go to a shorter break, dear viewers, and we will be back. And the break is over, and now we are going to a short report of the roundup of the year 2013, just to shed the light of what happened during this year, the year that I call catastrophic for the region. A report, dear viewers, and we will be back.
Year 2013 uncovered several disappointing events to many countries in the Middle East, while it carried other cheerful events to others, such as Iran. As Hassan Rouhani's election as Iranian president in June started the process which led to November's landmark deal with the US and five other countries that offered relief from crippling economic sanctions in return for a reduction in the uranium enrichment that fueled suspicions of Iran's ambitions, which it totally denies to acquire nuclear weapons. While the escalating extremism in Syria ensured that the talk of Western intervention died away in favor of a strategy of containing rather than resolving the crisis. The August chemical weapons attack near Damascus that was blamed on the regime, though denied by it, paved the way for the US-Russian deal on disarming Syria's chemical arsenal. That ended the threat of US-led punitive action already weakened by the dramatic no vote in the UK Parliament. Egypt suffered a year of turbulence, with 2,000 killed in the mass protests that followed the overthrow of President Mohamed Morsi by the army. The 30 June queue commanded huge popular support that reflected anger at the Muslim Brotherhood leader, who was democratically elected but failed to rule democratically. General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi pledged to follow a roadmap to democracy, but as repression continued, the great hopes of Cairo's Tahrir Square in January 2011 were a distant memory. However, Hezbollah resistance here in Lebanon declared its involvement in Syria by fighting openly alongside Assad and resisting Salafi and jihadi groups, including Al-Qaeda-linked Jabhat al-Nusra and the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, which play an increasingly dominant role in the rebel camp. Hezbollah believe they are protecting Lebanon and resistance along the region when fighting these extremists inside Syria, as they are coming closer to the Lebanese borders and plotting explosive devices that targeted civilians in Dahiya suburbs. So will 2014 carry more optimistic events to these countries?
Kivok, since we were speaking about Lebanon, we are going to continue with Lebanon. And we've seen in the report 2013 is the day or is the year when Hezbollah declared its operations in Syria. Was Hezbollah operating in Syria before, alongside the regime, before declaring?
No, I believe there wasn't any troops in in Syria before the declaration of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. They were very clear that we're going to involve in Syria to protect our Lebanon and our borders. First they intervened in on the borders because there were 23 Lebanese villagers on the Syrian side, and these people were targeted by Jabhat al-Nusra and they were slaughtered. First Hezbollah provided them with weapons and ammunition because they didn't want to involve, and then they didn't have any other choice because the Syrian army couldn't reach all the territories of Syria, and they intervened directly in order to protect them, because these people are not militants, and they have no...
They are civilians.
Yes, they are civilians. And then the Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS, Islamic State in Iraq and Levant, they declared a holy war against the Shias and the Alawites in Syria. And
and those particular villages that you were talking about are Shiite villages, just to
mention. They are Shiite villages, and then they started to target the Shia villages, and then the for example Maqab al-Zainab and other places to eliminate all the Shia
shrines of Shiite
Exactly. Hezbollah has two kind of interests to involve in Syria. One, to protect the shrines and to protect the Shia villages, and two, to protect its ally, Syria. The Syrian regime is well known of its open support for Hezbollah.
For the resistance in general, not only for Hezbollah, and we know that the Syrian regime was helping Hamas big time. However, Hamas changed its stance towards the Syrian regime, but we knew that it was helping not only the resistance in Lebanon, it was helping also the resistance in Palestine, the resistance everywhere.
Exactly.
So this is targeting Syria, is targeting the resistance itself.
Exactly. The Syrian regime was supporting jihad, Islamic mm-hmm. jihad, mm-hmm. Hamas, and Jabhat al-Shaabiyyah. Mm-hmm. Every Palestinian faction that declared its armed resistance against the Zionist state has acquired all kinds of weapons and ammunition and mm-hmm. financial aid from Syria. Mm-hmm. But the Palestinians are not able to fight in Syria except the Jabhat al-Shaabiyyah because mm-hmm. they already
because
have
they
troops
already
in Syria.
In the camps,
okay. And Hezbollah also now participated mm-hmm. in the war because all the parties who is involved in Syria, they are anti-resistance mm-hmm. Parties. Mm-hmm. Starting from Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. Mm-hmm. The last involvement of Israel was 40 days ago or 30 days ago in the Eastern Ghouta. Mm-hmm. They participated with their intelligence agencies to stop all the connections of Hezbollah and the Syrian army. At the same day, the Syrian army has lost a lot of troops, mm-hmm. even the Hezbollah lost a lot of troops, and they lost the connections among each other. There are regional intelligence agencies involved in Syria, and this excess of resistance mm-hmm. is protecting itself mm-hmm. on the Syrian territory. Unfortunately, this is a war. And the war is going on the Syrian territories. 20 years ago, it was going on the Lebanese territories. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because we are not a very strong states, we are weak states, we are small states, mm-hmm. and that's why the wars will happen on our territories.
Our
as long as we are not united, mm-hmm. there will be proxy wars going on our
okay.
territories.
We are going to move according to the map. We have Lebanon, now we have Syria. At the Lebanese borders, Syria has delivered, or the Syrian government delivered its chemical weapons. It was a major change in 2013. How do you assess this action by the Syrian government? What did this action do to the Syrian crisis?
The chemical weapon deal was not an 1 minute deal. Mm-hmm. Some people believe that when the Americans threatened Syria for limited strikes,
strike.
For mm-hmm. limited strike, mm-hmm. the Syrian regime presented its or gave up its chemical weapons. Mm-hmm. No, this deal has been negotiated for as long as 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and it was developing time by time. Mm-hmm. And the Syrian regime linked this file with stopping the arms and ammunition mm-hmm. to the jihadists mm-hmm. to Syria. Mm-hmm. Every time, it's a very big lie by the Americans to say that they are not supporting radicals in Syria. Every time they differentiate between the good rebels and the mm-hmm. bad rebels, this has nothing to do with the reality on the ground. This has nothing to do on the reality on the ground. The Turkish borders, 600 kilometers, are open for thousands of multinational jihadists. Mm-hmm. And we know that there is a NATO base on the borders, mm-hmm. and the Turkish intelligence are just silent about mm-hmm. it. Okay, the second
not silent,
thing,
but mainly they were helping.
They are helping them. The Americans
Syria.
Wanted to break the status quo in Syria because mm-hmm. we have the status quo and we have to break it in order for to change the structure mm-hmm. of the Syrian regime. And as long as I see myself, they failed until this moment to shape mm-hmm. the reshape the Syrian regime. Mm-hmm. They were able to shake the pillars of the regime, but the regime stayed very strong. Mm-hmm. In New York Times, the former ambassador of the United States to Syria, his name is Ryan Crocker, mm-hmm. he's a very realist diplomat. He said that the American administration should talk to Assad.
Mm-hmm.
We have to restart our negotiation with Assad because the situation now is different than mm-hmm. 2 years ago. 2 years ago, there wasn't Al-Qaeda in Syria. Mm-hmm. Now there is Al-Qaeda in Syria, and Al-Qaeda is a mutual enemy. And we have to negotiate with Assad in order to get rid of this mm-hmm. ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra. But the trap here is that the Americans want to give, to help Assad to get rid of al-Nusra mm-hmm. and ISIS, and then to get rid of Assad.
Mm-hmm.
But the allies of Assad, mm-hmm. Iran and Hezbollah and Russia and China are very keen
that Geneva II,
the headline of Geneva II is to be fighting terrorism, mm-hmm. to end terrorism and then To come with an elections, presidential elections or parliamentary elections in Syria.
But we are going to witness the presidential election in 2014. It is not
No, I don't
far.
Believe there will be an elections in 2014 because we still Geneva 2, we don't know if there is a Geneva 2 in next month. If there is a Geneva 2...
It was supposed to be held in December and then it was postponed.
Now in January, I guess, in 22nd of January.
But I don't think that it will be held because we don't have ground for it. Who is going to attend from the oppositions? Who is going to attend from other countries? We still don't know. So if it is going to be held in January, there are some preparations to be done.
This is the major problem in Geneva too, that you have the Syrian regime, you have Russia, China, and Iran, they are all declaring their support for Geneva too. The Americans want Geneva too, but their people on the ground, their proxies, and even Saudi Arabia doesn't want to go to Geneva too because the balance of power is still on the side of
Saudi
Assad.
Saudi Arabia is trying to gain something on the ground, a battle, just one battle, to be able to go to Geneva too, powerful and strong, right? This
the,
is what
the difference the between at. Saudi Arabia and the United States, that the United States always have they practice politics. They have option one, option two, option three, and maybe option four. For the Saudi Arabia, they have only one option. They want Assad to go. And this could lead to historical actions by Saudi Arabia, like what happened in southern suburb of Lebanon. And then they created the Islamic Front, called the Islamic Front. The Americans...
The troops that came, the militant troops that came from Jordan towards
Yes, there are several
Syria.
Thousands of militants. They are Salafi jihadis, but they said we are not Al-Qaeda, but it's the same ideology. The Americans...
But Saudi Arabia was counting on these to be able to balance the situation before
exactly,
the
Exactly, exactly. And Islamic Front, they concentrated their operations in the Damascus suburbs, in Kalamun
and
areas,
area
and also on the borders with Turkey. And they are trying to control the crossroads and the borders, because this is in a very strategic battles, and they even get rid of FSA, the Free Syrian Army. And that's why the Americans stopped the aid to the FSA, because they lost all their points and their bases.
They're
on the borders.
They're not strong anymore because the FSA have been having clashes with ISIS, with ISIS, and the ISIS was able to defeat the Free Syrian Army, or the so-called Free Syrian Army.
Yes, exactly. Okay. The ISIS is very strong since they have such strong ideology, and they are ready to die for their cause.
And they
are fighting for
a lot of ammunition, a lot of weapons, and a lot of jihadists.
Saudi Arabia is behind
themselves.
All these operations. I don't believe there is a difference between a Nusra and ISIS
or
the Islamic Front. They are the same ideology, but they are
and
under different flags and
different
names. But at the end, they are serving the same interest, the Saudi Arabia's interest, and Bandar Bush or Bandar bin Sultan, he is the head of these factions, which is fighting the Syrian army.
At the end of 2013, we've witnessed a change in Turkey, a change of position and stance towards Syria, and we've witnessed rallies and a protest against the Turkish government. How do you assess those protests? Do you think that the Turkish people are fed up of their government and its interference in the Syrian issue, or it's just a matter of the people wanting their rights, that's all?
There's two levels of for the Turkish problems. The first, the regional dimension, and the second is the internal dimension. On the regional dimension, the Turks are fed up with Erdogan's policy towards Syria, towards Iraq, towards Iran. They promised their people zero problems, and now they have zero friends in the region.
Thousands of problems.
Imagine the foreign minister of Turkey, he has nowhere to go except Armenia, their historical enemy. They have no friends now in the Middle East, and their interference in Syria has upheavals and in the southern side of Turkey. There were a lot of protests, a lot of clashes, and even Jabhat al-Nusra committed terrorist attacks in the southern side of
And this is what the Turkish president was speaking about before those attacks started.
He is trying to distance himself from Erdogan, basically. Abdullah Gül is trying to distance himself.
They weren't on good terms lately. We are going to speak about that, but before that, we're going to a shorter break, dear viewers, and we will be back. Okay, we are back after the break, but before we were speaking about the relationship between Erdogan and Abdullah Gül. How is the relationship between those two? They are from the same party, they were elected together, but now they have kind of conflicts or under the table conflicts.
This tension come up with the problem in Syria and also mm-hmm. with the internal problems. Mm-hmm. Now we have the corruption problem, which three sons of the ministers, which belong to the AKP and Erdogan, mm-hmm. they were arrested. And now even the son of Erdogan, the second raid, which mm-hmm. Was going to happen and Erdogan stopped it, it was going to target his son. Mm-hmm. And his son has links with Al-Qaeda members mm-hmm. who they are providing jihadists and ammunition mm-hmm. into Syria. Mm-hmm. And this is a very big scandal for Erdogan.
Not to mention the corruption scandal that took the whole media outlets were speaking about last
exactly.
week.
Exactly. Erdogan was preaching and teaching the regional states, transparency, democracy, mm-hmm. human rights. Even the Reporters Without Borders said that Turkey is a small jail for the journalists. Mm-hmm. It's an open air.
They don't have freedom of speech.
Yes, there is no freedom of speech.
They have 75 journalists in prisons.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and even killing some journalists. Mm-hmm. They are targeting the Kurds, mm-hmm. Alawites, and now it's the corruption. Mm-hmm. And plus, he is targeting the nationalist sentiments of the Turkish people. We mm-hmm. all know that the Kemalists and mm-hmm. This trend is very strong in Turkey.
And those who are secular in Turkey, he's trying to turn Turkey to an Islamic state or
yes,
something
like that.
Yes, it's
an Ikhwani state. Mm-hmm. It's the same. It's all like the project of Ikhwan, of the Muslim Brotherhood, mm-hmm. failed in Syria. Mm-hmm. It failed in Egypt, and now it's failing in Turkey. It's a domino effect. Mm-hmm. And Erdogan's days are numbered. I believe within a few months he might give his resignation.
A political analyst who had as a guest weeks ago said that the end of Erdogan is going to be like the end of Adnan Menderes, the Turkish leader who was assassinated by the army after the army took over the country. Let's hope the situation calms down in those countries. But now we are going to a more chaotic situation, which is Egypt. Egypt in 2013 was the headline of the all media outlets, and was the headline of chaos, security chaos. After ousting Morsi, the people took to the streets to oust the current president, who was elected democratically, what was supposed to be elected democratically. Morsi and the army took over. We've seen Abdel Fattah al-Sisi taking over and pledging to spread democracy and freedom in the country. What do you think is the future of Egypt after all of this?
It's very problematic to address. It's a very problematic issue, the Egyptian case. Mm-hmm. The Muslim Brotherhood came into power in democratic elections, mm-hmm. but they didn't practice democracy. Mm-hmm. This was the major problem with
the Muslim Brotherhood. And the problem is that Morsi gave himself more privileges than the ones that
yes.
Mubarak had.
Yes, but also they empowered the Salafi trend in Egypt. They targeted the Shias, the Christians mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Egypt. This mm-hmm. was all
it's seen
created.
2 weeks ago
it's
the
created
bomb attack
problems.
That took
yes.
place near the church in Egypt. We're witnessing terrorist attacks in Egypt. We're witnessing thousands were killed. Nearly 2,000 when the uprising or the protest against Morsi took place. So a lot of people are being killed in Egypt. It's been a chaotic situation. What can be done now to provide a free, independent, secure place for Egyptians?
Democracy is not like some people believe that it's a piece of cake you give mm-hmm. it to your people. It's a process. The Muslim Brotherhood came with the democratic elections, but they didn't practice democracy, as mm-hmm. I said. But the army also is not going to practice democracy, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The army always rule with an iron fist. Mm-hmm. And Sisi is trying to impose himself as the new Jamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt by proving that the nationalist trend should mm-hmm. Prevail in Egypt and not the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood. The problem with the Muslim Brotherhood, they put all their eggs in the basket of Qatar mm-hmm. and Turkey. Mm-hmm. But when the Americans, they changed the casket from Qatar into Saudi Arabia, they lost the support of mm-hmm. Qatar, they lost the support of Saudi Arabia, and now Turkey is in problems. Mm-hmm. So they lost all their power, the source of the power. The Iranians tried to open channels with Muslim Brotherhood mm-hmm. for reconciliation, mm-hmm. and they refused. the Muslim Brotherhood was very stubborn. They wanted to rule Egypt within their own values, in their own ways, and the Egyptians refused that. Mm-hmm. We've seen that millions of people went into the streets to remove Morsi, and the army took the responsibility, and they made a coup d'etat. And now they are redrafting the constitution. I believe that Egypt is not going into a democratic state as we think it will be. No, but there will be some sort of stability because these people.
Some people are calling for Mubarak to come back to power. Or
Mubarak
son.
Is not able even to walk now.
No,
to
his
go
son
into
maybe.
Power.
Or the Mubarak monarchy.
I think
his
it will be a mistake for the Egyptians to allow Mubarak or his son or his team to back. They should find an alternative between Muslim Brotherhood and the dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak, because Hosni Mubarak also he participated in the invasion in 2009 on Gaza. He participated in the invasion of Lebanon and even in invasion of Iraq.
And he of course, the latest killing of protesters who were protesting against the regime.
Exactly, exactly. And I believe now Egypt might witness more violence, especially with the operations happening in Sinai. Area, because the jihadis they are able within few seconds to explode the situation in Cairo by terrorist attacks, by targeting buses, just like they did in Syria.
Now we are going to speak about the deal of the year, which I call the deal of the year. It is the Iranian deal concerning the Iranian nuclear program. How do you assess this deal, and how would the Iranians benefit from such a deal?
Strategic. Some people think that this deal will lead to strategic relations between states, with the United States and Iran. This is a wishful thinking. This is the first step toward rapprochement between Iran and the United States. It has several levels. The first thing is the nuclear program. The Iranians are very happy for this deal because they didn't want to acquire weapons or the nuclear weapons. Now their enrichment will be 20%. They are able to enrich into 20%, and this is enough to generate energy and for medical purposes. This is one. The second thing, the Americans now, they need Iran for Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and even the Palestinian cause. Iran has influence in all these regional issues. This is why the Saudi Arabia is angry for this deal, because they were marginalized and they were not even participated in this deal. They had zero gain from this deal. The third thing is now the Iranians, the Western world accepted Iran as a regional player and they acknowledged its role in the Middle East. The Iranians didn't want, the only thing they wanted from the West is to the behavior of the the West to be to be positive with Iran, because sanctions,
not impose sanctions.
Sanctions, yes. Why to impose sanctions on Iran if it didn't work for now 30 or 40
Iran
minutes?
Iran never commit a war against another nation. Iran never tried to assassinate other leaders. Iran, those who other countries have done did not get sanctions, but Iran is the only country who got sanctions over its nuclear program, which is a peaceful program, and Iran have said several times that it is a peaceful program and it is ready to prove its peacefulness.
I don't see what's the point behind, even if the Iranians have nuclear weapons, where will they launch it? If they're going to launch a nuclear weapon on Israel, they will kill thousands of or maybe millions of Palestinians living in occupied territories. This is where to use it. This is the very important issue.
Are they going to use it against the U.S.?
They are not able to target the U.S. The Pakistanis have nuclear, the Indians, the French, Americans, Russians, Israel, everybody has now nuclear weapons, and they didn't use it. Only the states used it during the Second World War. Even the benefit or the usage of these weapons of mass destruction is not influential as was before. During the traditional period of World War I and World War II, it was considered a deterrent weapon. It's not now. Iranians
anymore.
Are able to launch thousands of missiles against any country who try to invade Iran mm-hmm. and not to launch one single weapons of mass destruction.
Do you think that this deal came because of the new elected president of Iran, Sheikh Hassan Rouhani? Do you think that it is due to a new president, a new era, and we know that he is a moderate president, and Sheikh Hassan Rouhani was elected by the majority of the Iranians, and he is a consensus president.
Yes. He is part of why Iran accepted the deal. The most important thing is Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran. I believe the supreme leader came into conclusion that rapprochement with the states will facilitate the Iranian maneuver in the Middle East to accept them as a regional power, and the most importantly, the economics of Iran. We have to know that the sanctions affected some sectors in Iran, especially the energy sector.
It did not affect the government as much as it did affect the Iranian people and citizens.
Yes, exactly. The Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, in one of his statements said, the most dangerous thing in this deal that the Western companies now are competing who will invest in Iran and who will invest in the energy sector of Iran. And this is a very big hit to the Saudi interest and to the Israeli interest in the Middle East, because there are billions of dollars and these billions of dollars
Iranians invest in their
energy sector, in their military and in their economy.
So we are going now to speak about Tunisia. We've witnessed this year the assassination of two prominent leaders in Tunisia, and we know that Muslim Brotherhood are taking over the country, and they've been elected and they are ruling the country now. What do you think the future of Tunisia is going to be?
Tunisia is the perfect example of the failure of the so-called Arab Spring. It started from Tunisia and it failed in Tunisia. There is no democracy now in Tunisia. There are elections. People believe that elections is equal to democracy. It is not. The Salafists and the Muslim Brotherhood, they dominated the state institutions. They also practicing their hegemony over over the people, while at the same time the majority of the Tunisians are seculars and nationalistic. And then I don't know who assassinated these two leaders, but they targeted the opposition, which represents the nationalist trend in Tunisia. And they were also affected by what's happened in Libya. It is very important to know that Libyan trouble has been expanded into other countries. And Tunisia, there were several, even suicide attacks. We didn't witness any suicide attacks in Tunisia 40 years, maybe 50 years ago. And now suddenly, now even the same jihadists now, this jihadi ideology is in the brain. People think that it's a matter of bird or, I don't know, mustache or something. No, it's here. Even there is now something called modern Salafism. These people were just like us. They are very moderate in their daily life, but suddenly they might explode themselves somewhere because they believe that they are fighting in the sake of God or in the sake of religion, very, very different interpretations than what is real Islam is. The same thing happened in Syria. We were living in harmony with all Muslims and Christians and Druze and everybody. But then the Wahhabi trend hit the society and they hit the brains, and these people became suddenly monsters and they want to die. This is the problem, that the people want to die.
Not only in Syria, but also we wanted to speak about Yemen, but unfortunately we don't have any more time. Also in Yemen, Al-Qaeda is working and it's doing its job greatly. And of course we witnessed in Yemen a seventh war in Sada between the Houthis and the government.
Yes.
And now we're witnessing clashes that have been going since December 20 in the South Yemen, where the government and the tribals in South Yemen are conflicting. So all of those countries who had what the so-called Arab Spring have turned into a total chaos. How do you assess this?
It's the headline, it's the big headline. It's the failure of the Arab Spring. We aimed for more democratic regimes, more freedom for us to develop ourselves, more education for these people, but it came in the contrary. The Americans supported all the radical elements in the Middle East, in Northern Africa, to destroy the project of the Arab Spring in order to make us backward. Mm-hmm. There is a very famous saying, put the Arabs in their place and keep them in their place. This is what the Americans are working for.
Thank you so much, Kivor Karmasyan, for being with us on the show. Let's hope that 2014 would be much more than better than 2013, Charlie. Which was a really bad year on the whole region. And thank you so much for being in the show and for the great analysis that you gave us. Dear viewers, our time is up. I'll see you next week.